Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another one of our Urbanite radio broadcasts. In this issue of the Urbanite, which will be the November 2009 issue, there's a fascinating article called The Gift about Ilich Rivas and his father Alejandro, who are here in Baltimore. And Ilich, the son, 16, is that right?
Yeah.
is going to conduct with the Baltimore City Orchestra, studying here at the Peabody. An incredible story, which we're about to launch into. And Ilich and Alejandro, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, people always like to make a lot of this word prodigy, you know, because if you're young and talented, you... But it can also be kind of scary to be called a prodigy when you just want to be a young person who plays good music. Right?
Yeah.
So tell me about... at 16, though, it's odd to have somebody even consider conducting the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. I mean, that's an event. That's a major event. But I'd like to go backwards first and just kind of talk about where it began. I mean, about your family and how this music and love and passion for music is a piece of the soul of the Rivas family. Because you're from Venezuela.
Venezuela, yes, absolutely. We come from a musical family. My grandfather was a band conductor, and then he was making sure that all his sons were involved somehow in the world of music. That's why my father is also a conductor, and I have an uncle who is a composer, another one is a pianist. In my mother's side is also a jazz player, a saxophonist. Mm-hmm. So my mother also conducts a children's choir. So it was impossible to escape, to be out of this, you know, atmosphere.
Fated and destined to be a musician.
Probably.
Yes.
And, you know, I was making music since I was also very young. I started playing the cello when I was 8. And when I was 13, I was already a member of a symphony orchestra in my hometown. Mm. Where I spent probably about 5 years, and then I went further for more formal studies in music and conducting, of course. And in 1996, I have the opportunity to come here, actually to Cincinnati, to the College Conservatory of Music, to do a master's degree in conducting. And but that time, Ilich was already, 3 or 4 years old, and he started already showing some signs of, love and passion for music. And after that, I mean, it's just him who has been always very interested and asking for a lot of information because he wants to go, very deep into music. That's how I think it started.
To talk about as being, I don't know how far back you can recall your passion for music when it started. Can you think about where that began?
Well, I just know that it's always been, ingrained in me. And that's why I think that the word, prodigy is kind of deceptive because for me, it's simply just been my prominent passion. And that's all. And that's why I've worked on it so hard and spent so much time on it.
That's important because we have this idea when you say prodigy that all of a sudden something's supposed to well up out of nowhere and... Yeah. You're supposed to be able this genius musician or whatever it is, writer. But it's work. It's you spent time working at something that was in you and you developed it.
Of course, yes. It's hours and hours. But because you're passionate about it and these hours aren't, planned or anything. It's just because the fact that you're, genuinely in love with the music permits you to improve because you're practicing so much. So
what I made just think about, we were talking before we went in here about your passion for other things and soccer and other things that the two of you kind of kick the ball around to relieve the tension of music, I guess, and the love of soccer. But the danger I think about sometimes is when someone is so impassioned and good at a particular thing at a very young age, as you are, Ilich, there's a huge part of the world. There's so much more in life than just a passion. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. How do you balance that? Because I get the feel just from meeting the two of you and the article, what it touched on, that you do work really hard to kind of do more than just your music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's as a musician and specifically as a conductor, it's very important to know what life is to be able to do it well. And I think that that's something that it's a good excuse to get out and do other things as well. If you look at the lives of great composers, you know, they had normal lives too. They did great things. And so, you know, then that's when you realize you don't have to spend 24 hours on this and to give you the right level of emotions and of freshness when you're conducting, you need to learn what life is too in other aspects and not just
conducting
music.
is very interesting because a difference with, for instance, being an instrumentalist, this is a very social activity, something that requires for you to be in front of a lot of people and to speak to them and to be, you know, frank about many things in the real world. You need to be somebody who has been living the world to be able to portray some pictures when you are talking about specific work, a specific phrase in front of an orchestra. So it's pretty much impossible to be able to do that if you are not much more kind of a live person, somebody who is out there and knowing the world and you know, enjoying many, many things.
Because you're a conductor as well, Alejandro, right?
Yes, of course, yes.
So you both, what were your initial instruments when you started? You said cello,
cello,
right?
Cello is my instrument, yes. Yeah.
And still is your instrument?
It is my instrument, and Ilitch is piano.
It's piano.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you play other things as well?
No, piano and... I think one instrument to have very well is better than
five or six is a little bit.
Yes, but of course I chose piano. I think because of conducting, because it's a very, you know, it's an important aid when you're conducting to learn scores and all of these things. And
so you have an orchestra. Piano in particular for you? Do you think?
Well, you can have sort of the orchestra in your fingers, you know, because you have all these notes, and it's much easier to learn a piece if you're able to play it as well, an orchestral piece. I mean, so, but that doesn't mean that, you know, another instrument is, you know, that piano has to be the only instrument for a conductor. But I was always fascinated with the piano as well. So when
you're conducting, both of you, I mean, we're obviously going to talk a lot about Ilitch and is coming up as a 16-year-old at Peabody and conducting the Baltimore Symphony, which is just, I would be terrified at 16. We'll talk about that. But it's that when you're conducting, I mean, what is it that you're hearing and seeing when you're conducting an orchestra with these complex scores in front of you and all these musicians, and you have to control all that and hear the sound and make it happen?
Well, I think you have a very clear idea of what you expect to hear when you are in a podium, because there is a previous work you have done of, you know, getting the piece inside of you for interpretation. And once you are in the podium, you already pretty much are hearing things very little seconds before things happen, because that's what you want. The sound of the orchestra that needs to come up is what you want or what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, with this big spectrum of sound in your head and at the same time what is happening, and you try to accommodate things through your gestures, it's a very complicated thing to explain, but everything works in a very, very, very fast, in a very fast moment.
Internally and intellectually, both at the same time.
Both at the same time, because at the same time you need, of course, to be listening what is going on and try to react to that.
Yeah, if you're really fully prepared when you're going to conduct an orchestra, you should have a full universe of ideas once you're on the podium. And all you have to do is try to mold what's in front of you to fit those ideas, which are in your right. But that's, if you're well prepared, then that's what then you're confident, and it is much more simple than if you're not, to mold the orchestra so that they mold to one's ideas. So there's a perception that conducting is, you know, make the musicians follow you and all this, and that's what it was originally. But I think now what conducting has really evolved to is for someone to make a unified idea of a piece and bring everyone together. And so for this is why I'm saying you need all these ideas.
When you think about being a conductor, and Alejandro, you can chime in to this, when you think about being a conductor, I mean, when you direct a play and you have these characters that you have to kind of bring some unity to on the stage, which I know more about than I do. I don't know how to conduct an orchestra. I know how to direct a play, but I don't know how to conduct an orchestra. So, but when you do that, you're also listening to the actors in terms of how they interpret a character,
mm-hmm.
and actually listen to them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not just you telling them how to do the mm-hmm. character. Mm-hmm. So how does that fit in? Is that the same way you think about directing music?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you have to, of course. Sometimes you're surprised that things that musicians are doing are even, you know, much more fantastic than the idea you had. And so you have to let them do it because it's much better than one's own idea. So, of course, it's not to be a dictator and do one's own.
Which is an idea that many people have about conductors, that maestros are dictators.
Well, it used to be, I think it used to be a little bit like that before. You know, conducting is something that has been evolving technically even through the last 50 years. And you have the case of a lot of conductors at the beginning of the 20th century who were there trying to impose their ideas without not much technical skills. So, you know, one of the techniques they used was just to try to impose things by force. And they have this preconceived idea of how to get things, and they were trying, without listening what was going on really in the rehearsal, to impose their own ideas. Mm-hmm. Things has been changing, and now a lot of things you can say with your hands instead of with your words, your own words, and it works wonderfully. And actually, there is now a much more flexible deal between conductor and musicians, where you can hear exactly what you were saying about an actor. If this oboe player is playing a wonderful solo, a little different to what you have preconceived, but is still working incredible, wonderful, well, that's something that you need to let to happen, because it's just bringing, everything is gaining with this. The orchestra is gaining, the soloist is feeling, realize in his own way, and as a musician and as a conductor, you are feeling a wonderful moment too.
It's much better in the long run after a concert or something, after rehearsing, that you've created a social foundation with the orchestra as well as a musical one than just a musical one. And that's, I think, where conducting is heading.
So I'm curious about why you think you... Well, it's kind of not a good question. I'm curious about how you moved into the direction of being a conductor. What I mean, you started playing piano, but the article talks about how you were always waving your hands and you're just always conducting. But talk about what happened to you as even a younger person, because you're 16 now, but when you started feeling the passion for this.
Before the piano, I think my passion was for conducting, but of course it's good to create a foundation with something so that, you know, someone who might question in the future. I do play an instrument, you know, it's not that I just move my arms around. But it's always been I remember from the smallest time, a fascination with the physical interpretation of something, of music. Mm-hmm. And I always just put recordings on and started to move my arms and how I felt them, and I realized that that was actually a profession. Mm-hmm. and that I could, you know, if I worked hard, I could get to a good level with it. So
clearly, people like you, at 16, and there are a dozen other musicians and artists I can think of who started very early in life to be known as a musician. Whether it's whether it was Stevie Wonder or whoever it was, you know, there are people who started very early and then had something in them. Mm-hmm. But part of it must be also environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the home you grew up in was a literary, musical, cultural home that was sort of, it was just in you as a child. It was all around you all the time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And always my mother and father are always emphasizing, you know, also how to be a good person as well, you know? Mm-hmm. And to grow up and how to, you know, blend into society and all these things. And so it's, I think that's probably the major component besides anything, is the immense support I've had from the time I was very little, and that, you know, when I was waving my arms, they weren't, you know, laughing or, oh, what's this kid doing? Or why is he conducting? You have to be, you know, 75 to be a conductor. And that, but they always, you know, took me seriously and even made an audience for me all the time to record to conduct the recordings and all these things. So it's this support that's, I think, crucial in making me so confident.
Illich was always very interested in joining me for rehearsals and concerts. I mean, that was something I didn't ask him to do. He just want to go. Mm-hmm. And I say, of course, let's go. And he will sit there and listen to a whole rehearsal, which lasts probably 3 hours sometimes. And I thought at the end, I'm talking when he was probably 5 or 6, that he was going to be probably sleeping after this long thing. And he wasn't. And I turned around and looked for Illich. I didn't find him anywhere. And he was already on the stage talking to some musicians. He was asking questions.
How old?
He was like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably in Cincinnati when I was conducting an orchestra there. And that happened several times. And of course, I mean, he was overexcited about, you know, the way of I was standing there and being a commander at some moment and making music to happen. And when he got home after a rehearsal, after a concert, he would spend hours or 2 hours just trying to do the same thing. And so, yes, as you say, I mean, the environment is a crucial thing here, a crucial element.
So how did the relationship begin between you and Maren Alsop? I mean, she was also a woman at 16, not a woman, but also she was a child at 16 who entered Yale University very young, and you're here studying Peabody Conservatory at 16. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting kind of juxtaposition, but how did this relationship begin between you and Maren Alsop? Where did that come from?
Well, it was a very kind of instant and spontaneous in a way, because I just went to we were living in Denver, and she goes and conducts the Colorado Symphony a lot.
Oh, right.
So we went there and gave her my DVD just as a, you know, to see what she would think. And of course, that's not usually the way to do things, but I think we felt quite confident. Even she said that when she received it, she's like, oh, God. But the day after that, right away, she sent an email saying, you know, asking, who's your teacher? We want to have you, you know, who's this talent and all this. And so she wanted me to go to the Cabrillo Festival, which she has in California, Santa Cruz.
Not a bad place to go.
No. So that same summer, like within 3 months after that video, I was, in Santa Cruz in her workshops and everything. And from there, the whole idea about bringing me to Peabody kind of flourished there. So and it went quite quickly. And of course, then I came in and auditioned with the actual symphony to get the film.
And do you work and rehearse with the Baltimore Symphony?
Not yet, but of course, it's 2 years. It's a 2-year program where I'll get a diploma from Peabody, and so I can take everything from philosophy to theory to all kinds of things. And the first year, they want me to get, you know, as much as I can out of Peabody. And occasionally, like I did actually last week, conduct the orchestra a little bit, just
rehearsal.
To conduct them. Yeah, while you know, with Maren supervising and all this.
What was that like?
Oh, well, fantastic. I mean, their response is, that's when you realize why you're doing this, you know, why you're conducting. Because
how do they respond to you? I mean,
if you have, like I said, if you have a piece well learned, and even if you're not going to talk to them and just conduct them. And
what did you do? What piece were you doing?
Mahler 4.
That's not an easy piece to do.
Yeah.
That's a very tough piece to do.
I just did a little bit. I mean, I did a little bit of the first movement.
Thank you.
you know, it's such a fantastic orchestra, how they respond to musical ideas so clearly. You know, they obviously have all of the technical issues fixed, so all I have to do is sit up there and make music, and they'll respond. So it was wonderful. So that's basically for the first year. But I know that in the second year, I'll be able to rehearse more and do more things, you know, prepare me more for the real world.
Will you think you will end up conducting the symphony in public?
Oh, well, yes, eventually there's some hopeful plans, yes. I'll definitely let everyone know.
We'll all know. I'm sure the world will know. Yes, the world will know.
Yeah, yeah. Let me know.
Yeah. Tell your dad, please. Yeah. So, Alejandro, I mean, you as a family made a huge sacrifice in many ways to help Illich grow. I mean, here you were both, you and your wife were both employed in Denver, and you left all that to move to Baltimore, to Pikesville.
Yes. Yeah, I always say, well, it's something that I don't like much, this word sacrifice, because we don't feel it really that inside that way, that we are, you know, taking many risks and because of Illich. And I think we did all of this because we strongly feel that we are almost like a team. Mm-hmm. We work things together. And the fact that Illich has been very successful so far and has get to the level he have get in conducting, I did consider that was not a really good moment to cut that out and you know, let Illich to go by himself, especially at his age. He's still 16, of course. And I was thinking, instead of being even more supportive now that he has, he's getting more compromises and more responsibilities, and of course, is something that we decide. You know, is a difficult thing to do, but it's very important for Illich to keep growing in this important moment of his life, in the way he needs to do and feeling the full support of his family and keeping the same environment that has made him to be so confident and so you know, secure of what he's doing. In the meantime, well, of course, we are trying to solve the other part, which is of course not easy to solve, but we feel confident that somehow we're
going to
be working. And
your mother, your wife, is she's a professor, right?
Yes. She's a professor of Hispanic literature and Spanish. Mm-hmm. And she was also working for DU, the University of Denver. Mm-hmm. And we were there for 3 years. I was working for Metro State College of Denver, and she was in Denver University.
And I understand from the article that she's an expert on Eduardo Galeano.
Right? Yes. Yes.
That's interesting. Interesting. Well, we'll have to interview her about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love Galeano's work. So now in your day, I mean, how much do you practice together? Do you still, because you're in Peabody all day, so how much work do you do two together?
Mm-hmm. Well, really our work is, it's not, you know, like every day we have an hour to, but when I'm preparing a piece, of course we spend an actual frame of time dedicated to that piece. But I'm always learning from him, and we're always talking all the time, whether we're in the car or something. You know, we'll talk about soccer and other things, but most of the time we're, you know, forming and building things on music and history and all these things. So it's basically all the time, I should say, that we're, you know, quote unquote working.
That's interesting. So, yeah. I mean, part of what obviously is here, there's this very rich dynamic and love and dynamic between the two of you.
I think I don't know what it is. I mean, because maybe Illich character or my personality too, that is very easygoing.
So are you.
Yeah, I mean, he's. I think we enjoy a lot together when we're talking either about music or we're talking about other things or going to a place and discussing. We have some argues sometimes about composers, about a certain piece. And we try to defend our points very hard.
We have differences.
Yeah, but I always say that he's 99.9% of the time right whenever we argue. So I quit. I stopped arguing with him.
Not really fully. But not really. Yeah. But even that, you know, that yeah, that arguing is we both know that is just something that is going to always end happily.
Yeah.
It's something that you know we're going to have our conclusions and you know.
Yeah.
But in this the world that you two have, that your family has created, and the world that you're building for yourself, Illich, I mean, it's rare for. I mean, I've met other parents of young people who are brilliant musicians or artists, and you know their parents are around them. But it seems in some ways you really have kind of subsumed and put yourself back to help him go forward. Is that fair to say?
I think it's important, absolutely. He needs to also set up his stairs to have space for himself to grow. And I think I have a pretty good sense of to what limit to go on that and not to step on him. And so he should have always a room where he can build his own things, and I respect that. And I respect that, and I respect his opinions. We always, lately, basically, we have been discussing a lot about that, because when there are things that we don't agree, for instance, about a specific piece of music, I always tell each, well, look, it's important you have your own opinion too, and you are having it, and I respect that very much, because you are taking your own conclusions about something. Because the knowledge you have already reached and is your own interpretation of things. And I have my own, you know, life, which has been formed under very different elements. I was growing in Venezuela in a very different environment that Illich have had in his life. So that makes us different people. And I think I try always to make emphasis and to develop our relationship in things that we can enrich to each other. But in things that can make a difference between each other, I will be always very respectful. And I think it's important, of course, for both of us to have our own way of thinking too. Yeah.
I think it's that balance that has that
it's a balance,
creates
yes.
that bond between us. So, yeah.
So when you're not at Peabody... And you're not studying conducting, you're not working on scores. What kind of music and other things do you do?
Well,
I mean, at 16, what else are you doing besides your conducting?
Plenty of things.
Like what?
I love, like I said, to play soccer, to watch a soccer game on TV, you know, we go at least once a year to Venezuela. And when I'm there, I usually, you know, we'll take a lot of time off of my stuff and just spend time with my family. I have a humongous family there and... do all kinds of things. I love to, you know, take a girl to a movie or to a
concert. That's a good thing.
I really do. I must say I do. I'm not.
You have your license yet?
No. Okay, no, I don't. So that's, I need it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Venezuela, he takes two, no one.
Different social rules here.
No, it's not because of the social rules. It's just because I feel more crazy when I'm there. That's all. I just feel more free. The environment there, you know, the tropic and all that. So yeah.
There is something beautiful about Latin America. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
So, and all of it. But so, then what do you read?
Well, I'm right now, actually, at this moment, I've been reading... It sounds very nerdy. I've been reading the Iliad because I want to get into the. I don't want to sound like I'm just saying. I've read a lot about composers and I realize that so much of them is reading and spending time reading. So now that I'm here at Peabody and that I have so much time to study as well, I'm really spending a lot of daily time on reading and trying to, you know, simultaneously read a different biography of a composer while I'm reading literature that. You know, he or she liked. So I was reading a lot about Beethoven because we've been working, and so Beethoven, almost everything he talks about has to do with the Iliad and the Odyssey. So I've been spending a lot of time with it and analyzing it and all these things. And
that's an interesting approach. Yeah. I like that's interesting.
Yeah. So I do that a lot because it gives you so many ideas for when you're conducting. And for Mahler, for example, you know, there's also Sprach. Zarathustra. If you read, uh-huh. I haven't read it, but I've been, you know, getting ideas from it and reading about it and things like that. So that when I did the conduct a little bit of Mahler, you have a clear idea of what they were thinking when they were composing. It does influence their music very much.
No, absolutely, yeah, because it's the cultural panorama that mm-hmm. is right, in your head when you're writing music or anything else that you're doing. That right. you
and there's also, because of my mother, you know, there's a lot of influence from the, you know, Latin American mm-hmm. Literature, which is so, you know.
Who do you like there?
Different. Well, there's people like García Márquez.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And Galeano, of course.
Galeano.
Who go to, you know, this sense of so deep into people, into our culture, and it comes to me so much. So, I mean, I think it's fabulous.
Yeah, Galeano's a very profound writer. I remember reading him 35 years ago for the first time, 40 years ago when I first picked up his books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a profound thinker.
Wonderful, wonderful thinker. And we have something incredible about our writers there. Every single phrase that you read, for instance, let me tell you about García Márquez, it's just awake your imagination in an incredible explosion of ideas that is a wonderful source for a career of conducting, where you have to really put a lot of imagination in the interpretation of works, or talking about many musicians about a specific idea in a work of music.
That, what you just said made me want to ask a question. I mean, about your experience growing up, both of you, coming from Venezuela. What's the name of the conductor at the LA Symphony?
He's
Gustavo.
Gustavo.
Right?
Yeah.
That in the literature of Latin America, whether it's Mexico, Venezuela, mm-hmm. Uruguay, it's a mystical realism that mm-hmm. kind of is in the work. How does that affect the way you think about music?
Well, as I say, I mean, magic realism in literature sometimes is something that you can apply to many, many things because of all of this experience that these people have written down somehow, the things that happen in our towns, in our little towns especially, where people think about incredible things and really things they happen and sometimes it seems to be happening. and it makes you think sometimes and to wonder, well, nothing is impossible. It's a path where you are as a conductor that by using your imagination and thinking that things could really happen, you can create really wonderful and great things.
So, Ilitch, talk about where you think you go now. You're here for, you're in your first year, right?
Yes.
At Peabody. So you have 2 years here, mm-hmm. at least. So we have you in Baltimore for mm-hmm. 2 years.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens next. Mm-hmm. Talk about what you think about in terms of your dreams about where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you know, the fact that more than half of my life has been passionate about conducting, there's no doubt that this is what I want to do uh-huh. the rest of my life. And
that's going to remind people, it's just this thing at 16 we're talking about. Go ahead.
Right,
good.
Of course.
That's perfect. That's great. That's great.
But, you know, and especially this year has been crucial because I've as you know, I had my debut with the Atlanta Symphony, and that was kind of a big way for me to open my eyes to see what the world is like of professional orchestras and world-class music making and art making. And so, well, you know, after these 2 years, like I said, I want to spend a lot of time reading and just spending time without feeling pressured. Or in the spotlight or anything. But after that, we already have, you know, some clear plans of me slowly starting a career. I'll start guest conducting, you know, to be very literal about what I'll be doing.
Yeah.
As soon as I come out of here, just so I gain experience. And from there, I hope that, you know, I'll gain the knowledge and maturity to eventually, you know, conduct with the greatest orchestras and make great art with them. So,
it's interesting that you conducted the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, but then said, I'm going to go study.
Yeah, well, it's not because I did bad and that I thought...
No, I didn't. Get off the stage. Yeah. Go back to school. No.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I thought, you know, now that I have tools to work with a great orchestra... that, you know, musically a technically, I want to open the panorama for all other things like literature and things like that. So you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I thought. And
this is great. You know, well, this has been a wonderful, a pleasure. and an honor to have you both in the studio.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to be with you here.
The two of us, and yes, Alejandro Vilas, good to have you there. And I look forward to seeing your work more and to seeing more of you both in Baltimore. Welcome to the city.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. Thank you. Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman, and our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gabe Pinder, and Devin Finley. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.